G'day legends and welcome to the Wednesday Pot Noodle by Celtic Down Under. I'm your host Jared and joining me tonight are Shane and Sean. How are you, Shane?
Yeah, good, thanks Jared. Caught up with the Socceroos for the first time in a little while. I won't go into detail just yet on that, but it was good to see them after a few years back in Melbourne, and thought I'd rock the grey fourth kit today. A little bit of a reflection of the Melbourne weather, but also probably a little bit topical, which we'll get onto later in the show as well.
Fair enough. And how are you, Sean?
Absolutely hectic at the moment, mate. Started a football season here, or the soccer season, as some of them call it. So just getting a lot of stuff done, a lot of admin things. It's quite hectic.
The joys of being El Presidente, hey, Sean?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
Give your team a plug.
If anyone's listening in Western Australia, looking to play, drop me a line to play for Leeming Masters. Leeming Strikers, but I'm playing for the Masters division at the moment in coaching. We could particularly do with some Metro players if anyone's interested in playing social.
Fair enough. Anyone in Perth, if you're interested, looking for a game, get in touch with Sean. You can find him on Twitter at SeanDownUnder. We'll crack into the podcast. So, Shane, international duties, you just mentioned you're at the Socceroos game. You were there last night watching it. So I want to touch on the one thing from that game that I loved was the fact that Jackson Irvine was the captain, former Celtic youth player, originally from over this neck of the woods as well, you know, leading his team out in Melbourne. It was great to see. But yeah, what was your overall take on the game?
Look, it was an interesting game. I thought Australia started pretty brightly. I thought we looked good in the opening 15 or so minutes. I thought we looked really promising. And then I thought Ecuador settled into the game really well. And even then, you know, someone we've mentioned on the pod previously had to pull off a really good save early on, and that was Gauchi, who was getting his first start for Australia. But I still thought we were pretty good. And then around the 20, 25-minute mark, I felt Ecuador really worked into the game. And, you know, they actually created a couple of chances and they didn't really do very well, to be honest. They could have done a lot better. I think second half continued on that kind of similar rhythm as well. It looked like they were in control and they were able to get a penalty, which I think was six of one, half a dozen of the other, as the old phrase goes. But then the go-ahead goal was a pretty easy header with no one on the back post for us. As the game wore on to a close and we brought some subs on, including a couple of players that will be of interest that we've mentioned on the pod before, like Tilio, for example, and also Jordy Boss, we looked like we were going to get hopefully an equaliser. We didn't in the end. It just didn't eventuate. But I think overall that the better team on the day ended up winning.
So I've got some questions for you on some players there we're talking about, and then we're going to throw to Sean to, you know, be the proud Scotsman that he is and talk about a great result that Scotland had in the last 24 hours. So that's why we're covering both of those two games before we get into other stuff further on. But the questions I've got for you, I have not watched that game. I wanted to pick your brain on it. So you mentioned him earlier, Joe Gauchi in goal. What was his performance like? And seeing him in the flesh like that at that level, in your opinion, is he good enough to come to Celtic?
Yeah, he is. He didn't look at all, he didn't look, I'm trying to think of the right word, you know what I mean, like unperturbed by the occasion. He was fine with it. He was in control, made a really good save early on. Like if you do get a chance to go back and watch the game, check it out because it's a really good low-down save. Made a couple of decent saves in the first half as well. I thought he was definitely one of our better players. He didn't look overawed at all, and he showed to me that he's got the aptitude that if you want to take him on board and take him to Celtic, that he's ready and can flourish. So I'd be keen to get him in.
Okay, and I've got two other players that I wanted to touch on as well that we mentioned. You said Tilio. I'm just getting the Socceroos lineup up here because I wanted to see how many of guys in the Australian team that played last night are currently playing over in Scotland.
Excuse me, Jared, the Subway Socceroos, please, to give them a proper name.
I won't, because I'm not getting a kickback for the show from that.
Eat fresh.
Things are available.
Sponsor us and you're good. So basically, starting lineup, you had Bage from Dundee United, Cammy Devlin at Hearts, Riley McGree, everyone, who we were linked with, but then we signed Matt O'Reilly because he went to Middlesbrough. Jackson Irvin, who came through as us, through at us and then played at Ross County. So we all know the level he's at. So there's a few there. And then on the bench, you've got Atkinson and Rouse, who are also at City. No, City at Hearts, sorry. Marco Tilio, who we mentioned. That's why I said City, because he's at Melbourne City, but he's one that I think would do good for us as well. The Cum Dog was playing, Jason Cummings. You had Ryan Strain, who he's at St Mirren, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Along with Keanu Backus was there as well. So, and then Goran Kuol, who is on loan from Newcastle up at Hearts as well. So there's a big Scottish Premier League contingent in there. So with all of that, my question is, it's a little long-winded, is Jordy Boss and Marco Tilio, from what you saw, when you got guys in there alongside him like Rouse, and you've got guys alongside him like Cammy Devlin, who are decent players at Scottish SPFL level, are they at that level or are they better?
It's hard to get a read if we're just basing it off international, because they didn't get a lot of game time last night. So Jordy Boss came on relatively late from recollection, and Tilio didn't get much of time either. Tilio showed flashes, showed that little bit of quality that we've come to expect from at A-League level. I'm not sure last night whether I'd make a call yay or nay on it just off of that. Same with Jordy Boss, but he's good size, Jordy Boss. I've sort of followed him before, but he's pretty sizey for a fullback.
I was telling you, Shane, we've always had, ever since Lustig left, we've been small at our fullbacks. And for Europe, that's part of what I like about Boss as well, is he's a big, rangy fullback. So
I guess if I can answer you without giving you a proper answer, let me put it this way. They came in at a time where we were needing an equaliser, and both of them looked like they were trying to do everything they could to get that equaliser. Tilio was working his socks off down the right, trying to get into good areas, trying to skin their fullback, trying to put the ball in. And Jordy Boss was really linking up well on the other side. So in that basis, when, I guess if you want to use the phrase, when the whips were cracking, they definitely put their hand up and tried to do what they could. So I think that shows a decent level of aptitude.
I look at Tilio playing on the right going, okay, could he be a potential Abada replacement? He's not going to be your starting right winger, but he'll be your backup right winger who can come on and make the games a bit different. He's a bit trickier with the ball at his feet than Abada is, but you know, I'm sure Andrew would coach him up well. And then Boss, yeah, he's just that good size over at left back who could, you know, be a good challenge for Taylor. What's some comments about the game? Sorry, go on, Shane.
No, I was just going to say on one of the comments actually that's there, it was a physical game. It was a really competitive game. For a friendly, it was friendly in name, not in nature. And so it was definitely a game where you kind of had to wear a few, and a lot of players did. Cammy Devlin in particular got split open very early, and you know, he actually lost a fair bit of blood. It was an interesting sight to see on the pitch. He just got up smiling like he always does. He's got a good attitude, Cammy. I've got to admit, I love him. I think he's a great player, and I'd love to see him more at Socceroos level. But, you know, the likes of, you mentioned Backus and that before, you know, there was an earlier friendly last week on Friday in Sydney, and, you know, we had Backus in the midfield, and he just provided so much energy. So I think that Scottish contingent, generally speaking, did pretty well across both friendlies.
And, you know, Football Federation Australia would be loving the fact that, you know, they can just book a whole bunch of seats together and get the, you know, the discounted flights in and out of Scotland for everyone.
Yep.
No, but yeah, it's that comment here from Andrew Galea. Game was competitive, very physical, good test for young players. As you said, Shane, look, it's good to see them. What you're saying, that, you know, these players prove they can cop a few kicks, cop a few lumps and get up and keep playing, which is good because we all know how Scottish football is. Andrew Galea's also said Gauchi was fantastic. So that's good to hear. Now, we've been rambling for about 10 minutes, so I'll quickly give up a couple of comments, and then the floor is yours, Sean, for you to wax lyrical about Scotland. So before we do that, Michael Ross, hail, hail, my upside down boys. Diana, hail, hail, lads. RL 77, Scotland 2, Spain 0. Here it is. And then there's a comment here from Andrew Glare, Kevin Rodriguez, Ecuador striker, 22, get him over. You'd think, I don't know who he plays for, but yeah, I've heard that and seen that a bit on Twitter today. But anyway, Sean, to start off with the Scotland, are we after McTominay now, after what we said a few weeks ago?
Yeah, we did slaughter him, didn't we? We said he would be the sixth choice midfielder if we signed him. And then he goes and scores four goals across two games for Scotland and just looks an all-round great player. One who is probably available, although probably out of our price range, which is another issue entirely. I'd say what he's done with that performance over those two games is really put himself in the shop window for those next, the second tier EPL clubs. Yeah, your likes of Newcastle, Leicester, that sort of club, they'll probably be looking at him now. He's technically started life as a striker before he moved back into midfield. I mean, I guess the surprise based on the goals he scored this week is that he's only scored one before this week for Scotland. But yeah, Scotland, I've been at work all day, so I've not managed to catch the whole game yet, but I've seen the extended highlights this morning. And we were brilliant. It wasn't like a smash and grab. There was like Spain had a couple of chances, about 20 to 30 minutes, all headers. And apart from that, like Scotland had like five really good chances to score and scored two of them. So it wasn't like smash and grab. It wasn't luck. It wasn't like when we beat France with one shot on target from 40 yards. You know, it wasn't like that. And all the chat before the game was, if we do win, it'll be our biggest first win against a big team since 2007, which I think is harsh because Denmark are a pretty big team and we beat them last year. So things are definitely looking up. That's Ryan Porteous has now played three games for Scotland, three clean sheets. Did Celtic miss out there? Mm-hmm. What do you think? I mean, he did his usual under pressure flop thing. It was quite funny to watch a naive international referee fall for it.
I actually think with Porteous, Sean, that getting out of Scotland's probably the best thing for his game because of the shithousery that goes on, that he'd always get caught up in with Rangers and stuff like that. Going down to Watford, getting out of Scotland is probably going to be help him mature and grow up a bit more as a player and be better for him long term. So, we may have missed a trick there, but at the same time, it's probably what's best for him and for the Scottish national team long term.
The other one that was brilliant, and I would be wishfully hoping we could maybe get him back, would be Kieran Tierney, who had a great game. And basically single-handedly set up the second goal, and it would be absolutely amazing if we get him back somehow because he's clearly still got it in him. And that Zinchenko at Arsenal must be some player if he's keeping Tierney out of the team. So I think Tierney and McTominay have both been linked with Newcastle, so we could see them linking up pretty soon enough. But Scotland, well-deserved win, massive win. And the Spain player after the game, I don't know if you've seen his comments.
Rodri.
Yeah, calling Scottish players cheats. I mean,
come on, mate.
Pot kettle black, you know. The Spain players were putting in some real hard challenges, particularly in the first half. It was a very physical game. Delighted. One of the biggest results ever. Just wish it had been at a normal, it had been on Saturday and I could have watched it instead of it being 3 a.m. on a weekday, you know.
Yeah, so what you're saying there about Tierney, it's funny because some of the chats and stuff I was seeing was that halftime there was a bunch of people saying, hook him, he doesn't look interested, he looks like he's injured again, all this sort of stuff, and then comes out with that second half performance. It's funny what happens when, you know, he's got a bit of a spark in him and he seems like, you know, he's up and about and he actually wants to go and do it. Like we saw it when he was at Celtic, he'd run through walls for that jersey and he'd bleed for that jersey. We saw it in the cup final where he basically went to the hospital and came running back. So we know the sort of thing, if he cares and he's got that buy-in, it's like that. But at Arsenal, yeah, if he's stuck behind, what is it Zinchenko, whatever you said?
Mm-hmm. Zinchenko.
He's stuck behind him, yeah. Zinchenko probably suits Arteta's style of play a little bit better. And with Tierney having so many injuries here and there, I can understand why he's not starting. But at the same time, some player.
The other one, Ryan Christie, looks like he had a good game as well, and he's not getting a game at Bournemouth, last time I checked. So there's a few of those.
Well, with Christie, like he was one that I thought would have been perfect number 10 in Andrew's system, just with the high press and with how, you know, how we used to joke Tom Rogic only had one lung, like he'd be struggling for breath after 55, 60 minutes. Christie had like 8 lungs here. It's just like a machine could just run all day. I thought he would have been a great player in the Ange system, but he moved on. So shows the grass isn't always greener.
Yeah, it was his hard press that got the second goal against Cyprus, and then he should have scored actually against Spain as well. He put one like just wide of the post when he was about 12, not maybe 15 yards out. So he was unlucky in that sense, but yeah, he looked like he's, again, not sure what Bournemouth team's like, but if he's not getting a game there, it must be good.
Shane, you got anything to add or we go through some comments?
No, just probably just circle back to that last point around Tierney and Christie, you know, and it's probably a credit to them, you know, not getting in, not getting regular game time, and yet they're able to come up and put in a performance like that. You know, they're particularly, I haven't focused too much on Christie, but particularly Kieran Tierney, despite the fact he's not getting much game time, his performances at Scotland level have always been pretty high quality. And so that's a credit to him, you know, despite that lack of game time, he's able to come out and play and do really well.
The other one that may be worth mentioning is Callum McGregor played every minute of both games and got man of the match against Cyprus. So hopefully you could actually see him getting rested this weekend potentially. But he was the only midfielder that played every minute in the two Scotland games. So
earned his 50th cap too.
51st against Spain. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yep. So he's in the Scotland Hall of Fame now and he turns 30 this summer. Should we be resting him against Ross County? I know it's jumping ahead, but it's certainly salient in this conversation.
I would, to be honest with you, because we'll tie this into the next topic anyway about injuries off the back of the international wrap-up. So we basically come back out of it with Maeda's hurt, Abada's hurt, Moy pulled out, Ralston went in and then came back out. You've got, and then what other injuries we have before it? We had Awada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So apparently going into the international game, Awada and Moy were both touch and go, right? So we rested them for the Hibs game. Then you bring them in. They have the break. So you could potentially have, one of those guys come in, Awada or Kelmak. Kelmak goes out for Awada or Moy comes in or something like that, and then it still would work for us for the following week.
As far as I can tell, only 4 first-team players actually played minutes.
And had
somebody might need to verify that, but I've got Alistair Johnson was suspended for the first Canada game but played the whole of the second one.
Yep.
McGregor played 180. Haksabanovic played 45, then 77 minutes for Montenegro. And O came off the bench for 30 and 20 minutes in the 2 Korea games. And I can't.
Did Abada play any?
No.
He was sent home before.
No. He came back before the games.
Maeda stayed on the bench and then came home. Carl Starfelt was on the bench for the entirety of the 2 Sweden games.
And there was talk that Haksabanovic might have pulled up a bit sore in the first game against Bulgaria, got subbed at halftime, supposedly carrying a knock, but then he came out and played the second game, which was against Serbia, and he played 77 minutes. So I think he's okay. I'll
check out the highlights of that.
Do you want me to tell you the score? Or?
Yeah, do it.
Serbia won 2-0.
Of course they did, yes. Anyway.
But no, that's the same count that I had, Sean. That's the same group of players I had, 4 starters.
So I get some comments here. So Vanessa, hope Ange was watching the Socceroos. Michael Ross's comment here relates to when we mentioned about Tierney coming back, when you said that before. His wages would be too much for us. Well, that's McTominay or Tierney, both.
Yeah. Either.
Yeah. Willie has responded saying Scotland are now firm favourites for Euro 2024. Yep, they're
going to win it. To qualify rather than.
They're going to win it. They're going to come in, do a Leicester, you know, 5,000-1 and come through and win it.
I know it's not Celtic related, but I've seen that Messi scored his 100th international goal as well.
Fair effort. That's impressive. Michael Ross, typical Scotland, will slip up against Georgia now.
Oh, yeah.
And then Andrew Galea is saying the first goal came from the Hampden Park surface.
I said, we've got Norway are on 1 point from two games. I think Georgia are on 1 point, but we've got a second game still to play. Spain on 3 points. So we're still six games to play, but it's a good start. And as much as Jason Cummings wants to come out and slag Scotland, like, and say that Australia's, and look, Australia are a team of journeymen, and they are a good chance of qualifying as the fourth, fifth, or sixth best team in Asia each time. So, but we're up against Scotland are looking good now, and Jason Cummings won't get anywhere near that squad.
And Willie says, "Go big or go home, mate." So they're favourites to win it now, according to Willie. Get him on the Tuesday crew pod. And, you know, just let him know every time in the comments, Scotland will win. He wants to get all the love.
Why do you think Jason Cummings is starting this kind of biff? We're meant to be together, you know, Scotland, Australia. Come on, let's all.
He's just a mouthpiece.
Just a knob. There you go. Yeah. There's very little brain activity going on up in there. There you go. That's what it is.
He's probably mates with Ryan Jack.
I think it might be that his brain's fried that much from, you know, being up on the Central Coast in the sun all the time, being a Scotsman, that he doesn't know what's going on anymore.
Then he played for Servco at the same time as Ryan Jack, right?
Or yeah.
So.
Why were they not playing in the Legends game over the weekend? this irks me that kind of. Yeah. Did you see that they had a Servco Legends versus, or whatever it was, versus International, and the money was going to a fund for ex-Rangers players?
What? Was that to pay the EBT benefit?
Yeah, like, tax, I don't know, man. Stuff? Yeah, it was called a benevolent fund. I was like, are you joking? And then the Liverpool one was like all for charities, and the Servco one was for ex-players.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
And a portion of. The rest of it was just probably to pay their wage bill this month.
Keep the lights on, repair the roof, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ibrox Stadium Benevolent Fund.
Yep. So we'll crack on to one of the main topics of today's pod that we wanted to discuss. So there's articles out in the last couple of days. When was it? About 4 or 5 days ago. Celtic and Servco linked to be relaunched European Super League again. So the current rumour is that, I'll just read it from the article that I've got here, and then we can discuss off the back of that. So the man behind the new European Super League has confirmed talks have been held with Scottish clubs, though he stopped short of naming exactly who they were. It's expected Servco and Celtic. I'm going to change it every time they say Rangers because they're not, then they die.
Who could it be? It was Ross County.
It was Ross County and Dundee United.
Yeah.
Or it was Darvel and someone else. There,
yeah, he just went, who's the oldest teams? Okay, let's talk to Queen's Park and Kilmarnock.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's expected that Servco and Celtic would be invited to be part of the breakaway league in some way. But when the initial plans were revealed 2 years ago, they weren't there because it was a closed shop. Spearheaded by Real Madrid, the original plan focused on guaranteed matches for a small number of elite clubs. Fans are raging, blah, blah, blah. The main difference this time is that the new look at European Super League will now look to welcome 60 to 80 teams in a multi-divisional format, guaranteeing teams at least 14 continental matches per season. So A22, sister company of the ESL, is assisting with the relaunch, and in the face, Bernd Reichardt has detailed how domestic kings in lesser leagues can benefit from the new setup. He told the Daily Mail, "Now we have a lot of domestic kings in less relevant leagues. You are the kings of your domestic territory but unable to compete with the leagues next door for the European crowns. For those clubs who are locked in domestic league with limited potential and where UEFA is not really a truly open and sustainable second frontier for their ambition, we want to be able to provide more significant earnings on the back of a higher amount of guaranteed matches. We want a more predictable, sustainable path within Europe, even though promotion and relegation should always comply with the sporting merit principle." So basically he's saying, there you go, "I talk to clubs in Scotland, but I must respect their confidentiality and I will fulfill that. It is still a case that the whole system of UEFA is set up to control everything, and I really hope that at some stage we will have another discussion about the future of European football. It is striking to me that when clubs made proposals for an alternative European competition, they were threatened with being expelled. I think the football deserves a more open dialogue, and I can assure you that I have spoken to a lot of people who want to know what we're up to. They want to learn about the court case. They want to know how our plans are evolving, but ask me not to let anybody know because they do not want calls from UEFA. So basically, whole bunch of words. Big teams in small leagues will be in there, 60 to 80 teams. Sean, what's your overall take on that?
Did they have a timeline, an estimate? Or did they give one?
I've seen 2024, 2025 somewhere, but really? It's That's not written in this. And then I've also seen 2027, 2028, but it's not in this article that I've got here.
So obviously that would really put the am I allowed to swear? Hold on. What's the difference here? Okay, that obviously that'd really put the shits up any other team in Glasgow if we overtook them and their older team combined for a number of trophies won, and then everything went to pot after that because it was devolved into a European Super League, and then that would be in the record books forever. But no, that's just a naughty thought. In a sincere level, it sounds like if there is a meritocracy to it, then I'm not opposed to it. The obvious concern are 14 games, but then just the logical extension of that is we are pretty used to playing 14 games in Europe before Christmas when we had those qualifiers. So it's not like, I think, pretty sure Brendan Rodgers' first season when we played Lincoln Red Imps in June or July. I think we had 14 games by the time we got to Christmas at that point. So it's not a massive uptick. What it would be, though, is we'd need to have our domestic would be seeing, I think, more rotation between domestic and European, which would be interesting. And I'd be thinking it also might be a step towards even expanding that European Super League to further down the line to the point where it kind of subsumes domestic competition entirely. And domestic competition would almost be like a division for the B teams. That'd be another concern. I mean, I don't know if I'm concerned about that or if that would be a good thing. And because it would also theoretically take money away from England and their TV deal. So even if they've still got their cash cow going on, surely the TV channels would just pay less because they'd have less money to give out and they'd want to be paying for this other product as well. It's hard. It's really hard to gauge without more details, but I'm not opposed to it generally.
So before we go to Shane, I just want to touch on a couple of things there. So where you've said it's 14 games, that's the first thing for me, because is it 14 games that we're going to play while still playing in Scotland, or is it 14 games total? That's the first question that I'd need to see more info on. The second thing is if we were to go in and it was bigger, my concern is, okay, so your top five leagues, you've got England, Spain, France, Germany, Italy. They're your top five leagues, right? There's a new contender, apparently. There's constant talks going on about the Benelux League. So Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, put all them together. If they come together, they're going to push France out of fifth spot based on TV revenue for that, because the French mob lost their TV deal. Mm-hmm. So there's not much money there. So straight away, in this situation, European Super League, I think that's going to look a lot nice to those French teams who don't have the TV money coming in locally. And then on top of that, are you going to be able to get your Ajaxes, your Anderlecht, your Club Bruges, your Feyenoords, all these guys from, you know, from Holland and from Belgium? Are they all still going to be around to go in there, or are they all going to be one league and just stay and become the fifth big league now? It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because I think this league would work well if you were to have the guys like Rosenborg in there, if you had us, if you had all the Benelux league teams in there, if you had, Sporting Lisbon, Benfica, Porto, those guys from Portugal in there. If you were to have or there's different clubs like that sort of thing. If you'd get some ones from the Balkans, like Red Star Belgrade, Partizan Belgrade, Hajduk Split, you know, Dinamo Zagreb, those sort of clubs, bring them in, this would make a lot of sense. But they're still going to need some stardust and some big teams to come across to, you know, make TV want to chuck some money in there. Because at the end of the day, like, unless you've got a Man United in there or a, I'm just throwing them in, so just because everyone knows globally who they are. If you're going to have your Real Madrids in there, if you're going to have the Italian teams in there, great. Then that would be what you need. But until that's happening, it's not going to, I don't know, it's got a few questions, more questions than answers, I reckon. But Shane, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you guys have touched on it perfectly, and particularly your last part, Jared. I think there's an awful lot of water to still go under this bridge, and there's a lot to play out here and to see how it's going to pan out and what could happen. What I found most interesting was around the dialogue that you actually mentioned. You know, the lad was coming out saying and really focusing on the whole, you know, being kings of your domestic league or domestic area, but essentially not having the right pathways to get to the big tables at Europe kind of thing. It was a notable kind of turn of phrase where it seemed like he was trying to build that undercurrent of those teams that do well domestically that don't have that easy opportunity to get to the Champions League, right? So maybe it's just part of a ploy to kind of generate that undercurrent of support, which maybe will then swell up and supposedly, you know, get other people higher than that to get involved. I'm not really sure how I feel about it, to be honest. There's still a lot to play out. And the other thing you've got to bear in mind around the time they're doing this is, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it's next season or the season after, the Champions League model's changing, isn't it? To the
Yeah.
That's going to be something to obviously go in conjunction with what they're trying to put together as well. I'm not really sure how I feel about it. There's a lot still to play out here.
So as I said on last time, Shane, on your chest right there, there's a gold star above the logo. To me, I'm a traditionalist. I'd want to stay in the Champions League.
Yeah, because it would definitely be the death of the Champions League, obviously. Mm. I guess it sounds like domestic would continue and Champions League would be dead. Yeah. Unless
so we can bring up if you want to.
I was going to say the only other thing you could think of to keep the Champions League going would be to have it as like a cup competition within, or maybe even if they partner with UEFA, the European Super League could become, you could have the same cup because, you know, that same cup went from European Cup to Champions League. It just rebranded.
Branding, so
So it could rebrand to be whoever wins the European Super League gets that same cup. And then at that point, the Europa Cup and whatever become competitions for the teams that aren't in the European Super League. And maybe that's how you get into it. That's how you get your promotion and relegation, maybe. I'm not sure how that would shake.
Your second division. So your top division is your Super Cup, Super League. Who plays for the Super Cup or the European Cup? Europa League becomes your second division. If there's a third division, that's your Conference League. But then we got some comments here. So Andrew Galea was, unless it's run by UEFA, I can't see it happening. Michael Ross was, will there be Super League Division 1 with relegation? Yes, that's what we're led to believe. And then Andrew was, the new expanded Champions League will give us more games and more money.
One extra home game. So yep. I'm not sure how much more, but he's right. It will be more.
And then Gonny yourself is saying it's too confusing.
It is the whole model's really changed, hasn't it, from that kind of really exclusive closed shop to it's now a 60 to 80 team multi-divisional thing. It's a whole different beast that they're obviously trying to put out there.
Bit of a cluster from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, cluster, I mean, and we won't use the second word because we've already done our one swear.
It's less confusing than the Nations League, and that happened. It continues to happen.
I'm glad you said that because it still causes me a lot of grief when I try and work it out.
We've been through it twice, and I still can't figure it out.
Jared, I just wanted to finish up. Look, I think you, at the heart of it, like you, I'm a traditionalist, and you know, if it came down to this or the Champions League, I'd much rather stick to the Champions League, but. It's going to be interesting to see how this pans out. It's kind of building this slow kind of undercurrent of support, it seems. There's definitely still a lot of opposition, but, you know, they've tried to, I guess, mitigate a lot of what people got frustrated about, which was the closed shop kind of approach. And they're trying to make it a bit more open to not just other clubs from within big leagues, but actually, you know, other leagues as well. But
Yeah, that closed shop was grotesque, and almost as grotesque as what the EPL currently is, which is, I guess, what we're all trying to band together to fight somehow.
Yep, 100%. So with that, we'll move on to our next talking point, which is Celtic have made another big backroom move this week by appointing former Southampton scout Kevin Hamill to the recruiting team. Football Scotland have reported that the Hoops have signed the scout who was instrumental in so many of the Southampton Celtic deals in the past. So the area he used to look after was north of England and Scotland for Southampton. So he was instrumental in Virgil's move down to Southampton, Wanyama's move down there, Armstrong's move down there, and
Forster,
yep. So he was instrumental in all of them. So he knows the lay of the land where we are, which is good, because as we were discussing with the new guy coming in from the City Group to head up the thing, he knows the Australian market, he knows the US market, he knows how these guys work. Kevin Hamill's coming in, understands the system, understands the lay of the land in the country and everything. I think that's a good pickup for us. And apparently he comes highly regarded, and there's massive raps on him from other clubs. Like, apparently Newcastle were in after him as well, and he chose to come to us. So with that info on the table there, is this another good signing for the club's scouting and recruitment department, Sean?
Yeah, and look, we've been doing a great job with scouting and recruitment in the last 18 months, but it feels like a lot of that is relying on Ange's prior knowledge. And as time passes, that knowledge will become less relevant and dwindle. So we do need to make sure we replace that rather than having to, you know, that well is going to run dry, or may well have now. So we do. And even on top of that, we can't be like, Ange needs some of his responsibility taken off his plate as well. I'd rather have a full-time person doing the same thing that Ange is trying to fit into his spare time and been doing a great job of, but if we want to be more functional and continue to be in this position where we're not worried about players leaving, then we do need to have this infrastructure in place. And if it kind of contrasts with the situation across the city, where the rumour has it they were asking for more sports scientists, and the board said, sure, but you'll have fewer players, and they're already been asked to send 9 out and bring 5 in on half the money, half the wages. So it's just us getting bigger while we watch our nearest rivals contract. So it's a power move, it's a professional move, it's a good securing of our future and running of our business, I think.
Shane, what's your take?
Yeah, I think it's a great move. I was reading up on him when the news broke. It seemed like he's been, unless I'm mistaken, there 10 years or 10 plus years, and I think he's been with them you know, since they've been back in the Premier League. And you know, they've made a number of decent signings over that time. So, look, I think it's a good move, and that's interested to see how he works along with the other new scout that started as well. But
For me, it's like when we had John Park running the show, he was like, he had all his scouts and he had all his network and everything, and then you had people come in, Lee Congerton, rip everything up, start again, and it was rubbish. And Nicky Hammond comes in, rip it up, start again, rubbish. So then you've got like Dudu Dahan and Lenny in the list, basically. So it's good to see how far we've progressed away from that. And as you said, Sean, like, Ange's knowledge that he has of the Japanese market is only going to, you know, survive for so much longer. So the fact of the matter is, even though he's got good links over at Yokohama and he's good, used to manage Muskie and then that sort of stuff. So he's got his links over there. He's still got his ear to the ground in Japan. But at the same time, it's good to be able to go, okay, so Mark Lowell's come in. He's then brought in a head of first team recruitment. We've now brought in a senior scout from Southampton. So you've gone Citigroup with the family last tie-in with Lowell. You've got Citigroup. You got Southampton, which is a really good recruitment sort of pathway. Mm. We're recruiting from the right areas. We're getting the right sort of people coming in for the right sort of roles that we need to rebuild that infrastructure to free up Ange to focus on the first team. So to me, I'm happy with this. Happy as a pig in shit, basically, is the easiest way to sum it up. We're good as gold. So we're good to drop those, Sean, as long as it's not within the first 5 minutes.
Stop it, us. Just take the ball, anyway.
One F per episode is allowed, and no swearing in the first 5 minutes, and we're good to go.
I'm glad I didn't use it on the cluster then.
That's why I just said cluster. Keep up. So something you said, Andrew Goulet, good point as well, which I didn't mention, and all these people will stay if Ange was to leave.
Oh, even if they don't, as long as their possession remains, then that's okay as well.
Hmm.
All right, so something you touched on there, Sean, about us going bigger and better and everything, and a certain club called Stintco, having to let 9 players go, bring in 5 only, ties in very nicely to our next topic, which is also the podcast name, 112 Million Reasons. So I was going to get the article up again because it's the easiest way to do it. Come on now, don't be like this. Celtic set for record-breaking £112 million revenue as finance expert fires ominous Rangers warning. Sorry, Sevco warning. So a confidential report in the Celtic's finances has revealed they're on course to announce revenue of £112 million for the year ending in June 2023. That would represent a record annual sum posted by any Scottish football club. And then it talks about shares for a bit here, which we're not going to bother because shares is irrelevant in the context of the article I'm reading because it doesn't tell you, it can be diluted the way Sevco have because they could have 400 million shares in the club and we could only have 20,000, for instance. So I'm not going to go into it on the share value here. But football finance expert David Lowe was Fergus McCann's right-hand man when Fergus saved Celtic when they were 8 minutes up from going to the wall 29 years ago. So he's studied Canadac's figures. And while they're clearly positive for Celtic, they won't make good reading for their closest rivals. The financial advantage Celtic have over Sevco is currently greater than it's ever been, and Lowe claimed that the gulf is only going to become even wider in the foreseeable future. And then it goes, in 2022, Rangers made the Europa League final. They sold Patterson, Bassey, Aribo for over $30 million, yet they still trail their City rivals commercially. Lowe said, first of all, the numbers posted by Celtic in the interim accounts are fantastic. Then the projections made for the remainder of financial year are equally impressive. Turnover $112 million would be a new record, which has obviously been boosted by Champions League participation. Should they hold on to their 9-point lead, that's likely to be matched or more likely be bettered next season because winning the title will see him qualify for the Champions League again. And the outlook for Celtic is compelling and gives the club the opportunity to put money to good use in Europe. Can Accord clearly impressed by the potential to grow that income. Otherwise, they wouldn't have recommended their clients buy shares. As to how that impacts Scottish game, it means that Celtic are currently further ahead of Rangers financially than David Murray's Rangers were ahead of the old board when Celtic almost went bust in 1994. There you go. So off the back of that, my question to you guys, touched on Champions League just there. How much of that launching place has the Champions League had to do with it? How much of that is down to Adidas releasing the training range, the Samba shoes, the fourth kit and the club? And what other possible reasons are there? Because I saw on 67 Hail Hail, there was a story where if you take all the top 5 leagues out of it and you get the actual value of the squad, the current squad in terms of contracts and what they could be sold for and everything, we're currently the 10th best placed club in Europe in terms of value of our squad outside of the top 5 leagues at €166 million. The clubs above us are like your Ajaxes, your Portos, your Benficas, all those sort of clubs that we rattled off before about the European Super League. So it shows we're in a good position financially in terms of assets, but then also money in the bank and revenue. So I'll go to you, Sean. What's your overall thoughts on what we've just gone through?
Obviously, these are speculative reports, but based on the interim reports that we released in December, where we had revenue of $76 million, it's hardly a stretch of the imagination. I think we had, in the second half of last year, I think we had something like $30 million income. So that takes us into record-breaking territory anyway, before you start taking anything else into account, if we just maintain the course from last year. And as you mentioned, we do have those extra marketing releases by Adidas. Now, what I don't know around those marketing issues, what does Celtic get a cut of that? Or is it, did they just license Adidas to just do what they want and Adidas just give us X per year? I don't know if percentages come into it. You would imagine so. I think traditionally they do.
I can actually answer that for you, Sean, because I looked into it, and because I used to, one of my old customers over here was Adidas when they were looking after Melbourne Victory. So I know the way they structure their football stuff. So they'll pay a fee, Adidas do, to sponsor the club. So to have our kits. So we all know that's what that fee is. It's been reported years ago when we signed with them and all that sort of stuff. So there'll be that yearly fee. But then there's percentages of sales. So for home kits, if we hit a certain trigger, say, you know, maybe $10 million worth of sales of kits, everything from then onwards of the profit, on top of that, we'll get a percentage of. It's the same with, that'll be the same with the away kit, the same with the third kit, the same with the custom fourth kit for St. Paddy's Day that we just did. For, you know, supporter wear, so jackets, hoodies, you know, zip-up tops, all that sort of stuff, same deal. So the training kit, it would all be the same. We get a percentage up over a certain marker. So they'll be like, okay, this, how much we've spent? We've spent $2 million to make this and produce it all. We want to get 2.5 times our money. So we want to make £5 million on it. Anything above that, you get a percentage on. And that's how Adidas structure the deals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds familiar to other deals that I've heard about as well. So it's good in that sense. Obviously, I personally am morally opposed to having a fourth kit and all that sort of thing. But if people are buying it, that's how marketing works, right? Like the only way they're going to not make it is if people don't buy it. So I'm not going to give them too much for that, you know. What's actually probably worse is people buying it to flog it on eBay for like twice the price, like on the same day it's released. That annoys me a wee bit. Overall though, like getting those kind of levels of income, all the obvious things, like we can technically afford better players, etc., etc. My concern is I would like to see some of that channeled into infrastructure rather than the playing squad. Not because, you know, we can always get better in terms of the playing squads. We can always gamble at higher stakes tables sort of thing. But the thing that's really put us where we are now is from the 1990s when Fergus McCann built a bigger stadium. If we were still in that 30,000 or whatever it was jungle back then we're not going to be having anywhere close to these record profits. You know, what's happening with the hotel? What's happening with all, you know, the Barfields? What's happening with all those things? I'd like to see some of it being channeled into the non-playing squads investment for future. You're technically investing in future playing squads when you do that,
Academy,
as well as making us a bigger team, a bigger profile.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Sean. For me, yeah, get the hotel, that'll spend money year round. Get a bigger superstore in there and a new ticket office, because that'll clean up a lot of those issues that we hear about fans talking about on match day experiences and stuff as well. Strangelove the doctor just here in the comments. Celtic Village, make it happen. Yep, so do that out the front, which we've heard about as well. So Celtic Way, build stuff up around there as well. Barrowfield, yeah, do that up, because we saw how slippery that pitch was that we're using for the women in the Colts game. So, you know, I'd rather do up Barrowfield, little 10,000-seater or whatever around there, 5 to 10,000, do that. They can play there. You can have the, you know, do up Lennox Town, improve the facilities out there as well. So you've got spots there, and then put some more back into our academy. So there's a whole bunch of things you can spend it on, which is going to turn over more money for you long-term, but then also improve assets that the club holds. You're better off having assets than having cash in the bank.
Let's go completely nuts and invest it in a monorail that will take people from Glasgow Central to Celtic Park and to Barrowfield in a loop.
And then we'll have Homer Simpson, you know, driving it, right? And we'll start the monorail song.
Mono equals one, rail equals one.
He sold them to Brockway, Ogdenville, and North Haverbrook. And you know what, Sean? That put them on the map.
Sure does.
Shane, what's your thoughts, mate?
I think to answer your question, which was, you know, basically what's generated the majority of this turnover, is quite clearly the fourth kit in the Samba shoes. Did you see the online queue? Like, come on. Like, if everybody involved, you know, rocked up and bought something, like, ka-ching.
I mean, that is not an accident. Like, how many times do you go in a queue and it tells you the number of people waiting? That is a humble brag set up in advance by design. You don't normally get a number that ticks that high. Usually it's just, yeah, you're in a queue.
See, I mean, it's just, you know, that we've released that kit, the shoes come out, this report. I don't know, it seems a bit too coincidental.
Walked in the Cody Sports on the weekend down here in Melbourne, and yeah, I looked at them and I'm like, oh, they've got the Sambas. Wasn't expecting to see them all the way over here. So that shows just how far things are. Like, the fact that we can get those shoes over here in Australia is ridiculous. So yeah, look at that and go. The other thing that we didn't factor in is, you know, money, revenue generating thing, Sydney Super Cup. I'll put that on there too.
Yep. Just getting away or getting back to what you boys were talking about, and particularly Sean's comment about, you know, investing it into infrastructure and so forth. I mean, we obviously just had a chat about the new scout coming on board, and Sean, you made a really pointed comment about, you know, kind of making sure those positions are maintained going forward, and perhaps we look at expanding that kind of area. Well, I'm guessing we could use revenue that we generate to help with that kind of expansion as well, so we should look to put some aside for that as well.
I also believe we've finished paying off the co-op loan this summer as well, something like that, the one from the Martin O'Neill days.
Finally paid off 20 something years later.
Yeah.
Or 20 years later. Yeah. Here we go. We've got some silly comments to bring up. I'll bring up a normal comment first. So, Andrew Galea, it'd be nice if we could buy merchandise in Melbourne. Yes, I agree with you. Like, unless JD Sports has it, Rebel Sport might have the odd top, but it's always extra small or, you know, or women's cut. And then Michael Ross's comment. Let's invest in an underground science bunker beneath Celtic Park and produce super players.
They'll just get poached by Liverpool and Bayern Munich.
I think the merchandise does play a significant part. Like, I don't think it probably makes up the lion's share, to be quite honest with you. But, like, merch, it goes. Like, people do like to buy it. Like, Celtic fans love buying merch. They love wearing the club colours. Like, it's even noticed over here. I know we don't get it as readily available, but people love, you know, I'll put my hand up. Like, I reckon it's the first time I've ever bought all four kits in the season. Normally I'd buy one, maybe two.
Kits in the season, Shane.
Wow, there, good point. But I mean, from like, all right, let me rephrase that. We've obviously had situations where we bought three kits out in the past, or even Melbourne Victory's bought out three kits, you know, talking non-Celtic, and it would be rare for me to do that. But this season I've bought all four. Like, I really like them and like enjoy wearing them. So, and I know a lot of people are the same, and I think it would make up a significant portion. You know, people probably did exactly what I did, critique the price and then still bought it anyway.
I think you critique it when it comes out, and then a week later you're like, I'm buying it.
Yeah, that was me.
You also like strips more when you're winning in them. So, like, you bought that grey one after we beat St Mirren in it, is that right?
This is 100% true. I actually said online to a good friend, I said, we hadn't scored at this point, I said, if we actually win, I'm going to have to buy the kit. And I was true to my word.
Yeah, like, it's fair. I'd say success and revenue go hand in hand, right? Going from memory, I don't know, maybe I made this up, but I believe we had 17 million in revenue in the interim accounts, I think.
It was around that mark. It was pretty high. Like, I look back at it today and it was definitely around that mark.
And that was before the Sambas and the Forfkit.
Yep. Be nice to see what it is when that all comes out here. So, Andrew Galea, wear them till they fall apart with the tops. For me, it's like I'm looking at it going, there's still a couple that I want from this season and haven't got them because every time they come back on sale, I'm like, I got long ass arms. I need a certain size so they fit my shoulders. And yeah, by the time I notice they're on sale, you jump on the next morning when we wake up, sold out again. You're kidding me. So fun time.
Yeah, it's something I'd love to see change down here. And obviously Liam mentions it when he's on from Japan. There needs to be better availability for Celtic shirts down here. I noticed the boys from the Sydney City CSC put up a photo of the fourth kit last week, and that's made its way to our shores. I think it added a store or JD or
JD.
Yeah, so like there needs to be, like, you've got to maximize. There's a real kind of interest in Celtic at the moment. There's always been this interest in Celtic, but it's just maximized with the likes of Ange and Harry and Moy there. You want to be doing what you can and just making sure there's a stock availability.
Yep, 100%. All right, so I'll bring up some comments to finish off the topic about the finances and where we're at and, you know, pulling away from them. So I mentioned about the shares before. Strangely, the doctor was Sevco shares diluted to the point they have the same value as used train tickets. RL77 was the blue pound is not what it used to be. Andrew Galea is Sevco will become a mid-table club. And Michael Ross, when we win our 56 league title, Sevco will implode. They see what's coming. That's why they keep losing the plot. And Shane, was that a cat I just heard?
Possibly. Normally I hear scratching at the door, so I'm not hearing that. It was either that or a train horn. I'm going to think it was a cat.
Yeah, fair enough. No big deal. We'll crack on. So, there you go. Gunning yourself. I've seen so many classic Celtic tops, old and new, at the Celtic Everton Sydney Super Cup. Yeah, there was heaps of them there.
Could have sold so many more if they'd had more stock.
That's true.
Andrew Galea, we need tops with a couple of X's. Correct. Yeah, big bastard like me, yes, please.
Oh. Yeah. I was confused about that reference. Is it what?
I'm okay with that as long as there's an S that follows it as well. I'm all behind the X's.
Yeah, fair enough. So Celtic back in action on the weekend, on Sunday, away playing Ross County. So, Shane, I'm going to go to you. What's your expected starting lineup?
Yep. So I think we'll see a couple of changes, maybe not a lot of wholesale changes like I've incorrectly predicted on a pod many moons ago, and Ange really stuck it to me by not making any changes that day. Good on you, Ange. Love your work. Look, Hart and goals. Taylor, Starfelt, Carter Vickers, Johnston. I agree on the McGregor resting. I think he probably gets a break, but I think it all depends, and I haven't heard the latest on Awada's fitness and even Moy's fitness to a degree. But assuming that they're both okay to come back in, I'd probably put Awada in and have Moy alongside Hatate. I think I don't know status of Maeda. I know he sat on the bench and then came back. I'm not too sure they'll put him straight back in. So probably Haksabanovic if he's okay. If that knock turns out to be nothing more than just a minor thing. Who leads the line? I think probably Kyogo leads the line still, and Jota on the right.
So for me, I was just doing some maths while you were talking, and I'm looking at it going, we're talking early on about Elmac getting the game off. And then I'm thinking, hang on, were both Scotland games at Hampden during the week?
Yes.
Yep.
So he hasn't had to travel. Mm. And then you look at it and go, okay, last game he's played was on Tuesday. So that's 5 days rest. He would have been playing off less when we're in the Champions League. I think we'll see him on the weekend. And then he's got a whole week off leading into Rangers afterwards, now that I think about it. So, yeah.
I just had to laugh then, because you obviously said while I was talking, you were doing some maths. I'm like, I don't sound that boring, do I?
I was counting on my fingers while listening to what you were saying.
The other thing to consider is it's on Sunday too. So there's an extra day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Scotland game is a Tuesday. Celtic game is a Sunday. It's almost a week off, really.
Come on, Shane. We've been maths.
We've been talking for a while previously about how it's good that we're building up the squad to give Cal Mac a break, and it looks like he just doesn't want to take a break.
But he had a break earlier in the season when he was out injured. That's the most rest he's had mid-season pretty much ever since he came into the team. So he's fresh as a daisy.
Making up for lost time.
Yep, exactly. So, Sean, what's your take? Starting lineup?
I'd say it would be the expected back five of Hart, Taylor, Alistair Johnston, Starfelt, and Carter Vickers, assuming no injuries. And then McGregor, probably, as we mentioned, as we've just reflected on, he's had more rest than we'd actually considered, plus no travel time. So then it's just who else? O'Reilly, probably. I see Hatate coming off the bench rather than starting, if he's actually recovered enough to do so. I don't think it looked like a severe hamstring strain, but he might still not be rest. Moy, probably. It seemed like his injury was also minor, so I'd say O'Reilly and Moy might start. So then it's just your forward three, Kyogo start, Jota will start, and then it's Haks, Banovic, or Maeda, depending on the injury status of Maeda. Maeda's just had some time off, so 2 weeks off, essentially. So, and he did play the last game, so I'm going to say Maeda on the left. Maeda, Kyogo, Jota.
Okay, I'm going to answer this comment here from here we go. I think it's Eamon, to be honest with you. What would be your alternate starting if we rest all first started? So our ideal, safe, going off what you guys said, let me try and figure this out just for a laugh, because you guys have pretty much covered what I would have done for the starting lineup. So if we go for our alternate starting lineup, so none of those other guys, so we'd probably have is Segrist back, or is it going to have to be Bane?
He's been out until now. I don't know if he's back yet.
He hasn't been. The Hibs game we won 4-0, I think, was the last game he was on the bench for.
I'll take the hit here, because I don't like Scott Bain, and go Bain in goals. Ralston, Welsh, Kobayashi, Bernabe.
Mm-hmm.
Midfield would be Awada if he's fit, with O'Reilly and Turnbull, and up front would be, who are we going to put there? I'll start with O.
Mm-hmm.
Jamesy Forrest, if he's fit.
Injured.
What's that?
He's injured. It'd be Abada.
Okay. Yeah, Abada then on the right, and on the left we'd have to go with Haxa. There you go. There's the alternate lineup. I made it happen for you. And even though
it is a strong team.
Even that would probably still run Sevco close for second in the league.
Not any room for James McCarthy, CSC.
No.
No, and he's behind Ben Summers now in the pecking order, right?
Exactly. So anyway,
Coming up on one of my apps as injured, hamstring doubtful, and he's been on that list since November.
All right, so just to wrap this, the preview of the game up, so first scorer and final score prediction. So I'll go first. First scorer will be Kyogo, and we will win 4-0. Shane?
Haksabanovic, first scorer, because he'll start, and 3-0.
Sean?
Moy, 3-1.
Nice. All right. So what we'll do, we'll start to wrap the podcast up. I just want to bring up this comment from Gonny yourself as well, which is, with the clock changes in Sydney, 2nd of April. So this Sunday, it's 9 p.m. kickoff because daylight savings ends on down here on Sunday. So happy days. We're back to the 9-hour gap instead of the 11 hours like it was for the last game. So 9 p.m. kickoff this Sunday. And then the derby is 9:30 kickoff on Easter Saturday. Happy days. I'm looking forward to this. So much easier to watch the games. So, thanks to everyone for tuning in and supporting the Celtic Down Under podcast. We really appreciate each and every one of you. If you haven't done so, and you're on Facebook, like our Facebook page, join our Facebook group on Instagram and Twitter. You could find us at Celtic Down. On YouTube, where most of you are watching, hit that, hit the subscribe button. If you haven't done so, like this video, hit the notification bell. So whenever we go live Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you get notified so you can watch it. And other than that, we'll go to our final thoughts. So you first, Shane.
It's AFL footy related. Sean and I will be at Loggerheads this weekend. It's it's called the Western Derby over in Perth. It's the Freo versus West Coast Eagles game. Freo starting the season 0-2, West Coast 1-1. Should be a good game. And hopefully Eagles get a win.
Hopefully they don't. Hopefully Dockers get their first win in the season. Other than that, just thanks to Scotland for getting me through the dry spell that you have when Celtic aren't playing. That really helped to actually have something big to celebrate. Well done, Scotland.
And I was just going to say my final thought for probably the first time ever in my life, the international break has made me miss football, something shocking, because usually when it's not on, I'll just zone out for a couple of days here and there, but wasn't allowed to do that this time. So, fun times. Thanks, everyone, again, and we'll talk to you next week. Hail, hail.
Hail, hail. Hail, hail.